WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Nick Toshis likes to write about people who live at the extreme ends of our culture. He chronicled the life of rock and roll wild man Jerry Lee Lewis in the acclaimed biography Hellfire, and followed that up with articles about Lewis's fallen evangelist cousin Jimmy Swaggart. New York street gangs and mob millionaires are some of Toshis's recent subjects. Now Toshis is creating fictional characters who live at the extremes. His first novel, Cut Numbers, is about the New York numbers racket, high finance, and greed. In setting the scene, Toshis was able to draw on his own experiences when he was 14, tending his father's bar in Newark, New Jersey. The main character in Cut Numbers is a loan shark who hangs out at after-hours bars.
At 6:30, Louis announced last call, and he pulled the cords that dangled from the two fluorescent lamps above the bar. The harsh, sudden light provoked the undead to move. Sniffling, bleeding, giggling, and gasping for air, they stumbled toward the door. Those who stayed for last call shrank from the light as if hurtling from awareness of their own ugliness. One by one and in pairs, they finished their drinks and left. As these stragglers departed, new faces began to arrive and to be served. Most of the stragglers knew that last call meant not that the place was shutting down, but that the place was changing. It happened every morning at about this time. The regulars were used to it, and only a few newcomers were foolish enough to complain. Besides, most did not want to stay beyond this time, for the faces that began to arrive at this time of the day were not the sort of faces to which they were accustomed or with which they were comfortable. Even the little Giovanostri, the tough-talking, swaggering young hoods who seemed to embody the moviegoers' fanciful notion of the evil in these streets, even they, who frightened the other punks, shied away from these faces, the eyes of which silenced them and stripped them of bravado and sundered their delusions. They were the faces of men whose own power gnawed within them like cancer, faces that had been recast by the renunciation of all trust and all love and all goodness.
So this shift in clientele is a difference between the small-time hoods and the low-level mafia members and the real big-time, powerful people organized crime.
Yeah, it takes place, this is in an after-hours joint in downtown New York, and it's the first after-hours shift versus the second after-hours shift, darkness versus daylight.
Have you been around for a lot of last calls yourself?
A few.
One of the characters in your novel is a small-time loan shark.
That's right.
And he expects that he's going to become real wealthy at this loan sharking business, and he has maybe $12,000 in the bank, and it's nothing like the $500,000 he expected to have by now. Why isn't he making it?
Because it looked good on paper, and it didn't work out in real life. People don't pay back. People come up with excuses. People flee. People die. People go to jail. The guy thought it was going to be easy, and it turned out not to be.
Who did you model this on?
It's a collective picture of several Shylocks in New York.
That you know?
That I'm acquainted with, or was acquainted with.
Do you sympathize with them because they're not making the money they expected?
Not really. No more than I sympathize with anyone else. It's a rough way to make a living, and they're basically dealing with people that can't go to banks, and it's with good reason that banks turn them down, so they're at the high-risk end of things.
You know, every movie I've ever seen with a loan shark in it always ends up in this absolutely brutal beating, you know, because the person can never pay back, so of course they have all their limbs busted by some tough guy who comes in to punish them for not paying back on time. Well, I always wonder in these movies why anybody would go to a loan shark, because you know they're going to be dead before the movie's over.
Well, I guess that's the movies for you. In real life, they'd always prefer the money, and if a guy has a choice between getting hurt and getting the money up, I guess he gets the money rather than get beat up by a movie star with capped teeth, I guess.
Now, what interests you in writing about a loan shark?
Well, it's not so much the loan shark as it is the underlying principle of greed on every level. From a guy in the street who wants to play a horse and doesn't have the money to play a horse, on up to a gold precious metals broker on Wall Street, and they're all playing with the same deck, just on different levels.
Another character in your novel is heavy into the numbers racket, and hasn't been doing that well since the state lotteries and state lotto games have gone into effect, because they've siphoned off some of the money from the numbers racket. Is that actually the case?
Yeah, 8 years ago this in New York, the state legalized the numbers and moved in on the racket guys who were controlling the Brooklyn and New York numbers. And at this point, New York State is probably the biggest numbers bookie in New York State.
How did you find out what you needed to about how the numbers racket works to write this book?
Well, ever since my childhood, I basically knew how the numbers racket worked. Where I grew up, there wasn't a person in the neighborhood that didn't play in numbers for a nickel or a dime or a few cents or whatever.
You know. How would that work?
Well, you would, person would go to whomever took the numbers for whomever and say, for instance, here's a dime on 330, my address. Okay. Now, at the end of that day, if all the money bet at the racetrack had three final digits that ended in 330, you would be paid off at 500 to 1. So $50 on a dime.
Did you play and did you ever win?
I've played. I never played it that much. My grandmother was big into it. She couldn't read English, and so she used to ask me to. One of my earliest memories is her saying, look up a dead baby in a dream book. I said, well, she bet a nickel on it. I don't know if she hit or not, but it was prevalent. It was a way for people that weren't wealthy to get some action.
Explain what you just said. Look up a dead baby in a dream book.
Well, they used to sell. They still do sell what they call dream books, and it's their listings alphabetically. You know, B for baby, C for car, and it would sort of interpret your dream. It was with probably the same degree of validity as, you know, Freud or Jung. And then it would give you the number that the dream supposedly signified, and you were supposed to play that number, and probably the number came out as often as could be expected. But dream books are still sold. They're not as prevalent as they once were, though.
You get in a couple of swipes at Bruce Springsteen. One of your characters says, good old Bruce, I got all his records. Usually I wear the little rag around the head like him and everything. These days with Liberace dead and all, Bruce is all that's left. You don't like Springsteen?
I can't stand him.
Why not?
I think he's an overblown wimp. I don't know. He's, you know, I'm sick of this. These millionaires singing about problems of the working man. False emotions. I don't know. I hope his ex-wife takes him for a ride.
You wrote a biography of Jerry Lee Lewis called Hellfire. When the Jimmy Swaggart sex scandal broke, you were following that as well. Jerry Lee Lewis was the wild man of rock and roll, Jimmy Swaggart, one of the television preachers. Do you see them in their own ways being flip sides of the same coin?
Yes, I do. At this point, though, I think it's debatable which side is which. The thing I find most interesting about Swaggart is I think he actually believes he was possessed by the devil in doing these sort of tame sexual frolics down there.
Well, the devil was a source of really potent imagery for Jerry Lee Lewis. Could you get to the bottom of why they both felt so involved with the devil, and one became a preacher to fight against it, and the other kind of gave into all those urges?
Yeah, the one, Jerry Lee, basically damned himself to hell for being ungodly, and Jimmy Lee, Swaggart, basically exalted himself to heaven for being godly, and I think it'd be a great idea if they went on tour together. Jerry Lee, at this point, doesn't have a recording contract, and Jimmy Swaggart doesn't have a future, and they're both terrific musicians.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Nick Toshes' new novel, Cut Numbers, is published by Harmony Books. This is Fresh Air.